BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of BDNG Meets podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Education and Development Lead for the BDNG. And I am delighted today to have Molly Connolly joining us on our BDNG podcast, who, as you know, is the education nurse for the BDNG and she's also a clinical nurse specialist in Edinburgh. So welcome today, Molly.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
An absolute pleasure. So for those that don't know, Molly has done amazing work in the field of neurodiversity. She's done a lot of education around this topic in the BDNG, which we are advancing, and also within her clinical workplace as well. So the focus of this podcast today is around neurodiversity. So Molly, can you just introduce the topic?
Yeah, so neurodiversity covers a wide spectrum of everything from what you would traditionally think of neurodiversity, such as autism, ADHD, dyspraxia, dyslexia, dyscalculia. But really, it's just about people who experience the world in a different way, that their brain works in a slightly different way than society would expect it to. That really covers the spectrum of neurodiverse. And about, it's estimated about 15 to 20% of people in the UK, all the way from children to adults, are in some level neurodivergent.
That's a really good way of explaining it and seeing the world in a different way. That's a really good focus and a really nice way of, you know, sort of explaining it to not only, you know, the patient themselves, but also to the healthcare workforce as well. So I know you have done sterling work on this and, you know, you really have led the way with what you've been doing. So can you just explain some of the aspects of what you've been achieving and the education or the formats that you're putting in place for support?
Yeah, so there's a wide variety of things that we're doing as the BDNG, as well as in my clinical role. So for the BDNG, I've worked on a e-learning module. It's not yet on our website, but hopefully soon will be on our website, which just basically covers kind of the background of neurodiversity, the different types of neurodiversity, and how nurses might be able to support people with that level of neurodivergency. We're also doing, for our conference this year, we have two different workshops, one that really focuses on that patient relationship, and one that focuses more, for example, on, let's say, if you're a nurse manager, a nurse leader, or maybe a kind of senior colleague supporting a colleague who might have neurodiversity, because there is now lots of adults who are coming forward saying, oh, actually, I do need these extra supports put in place for them to be able to do their job role. In my own clinical role, I'm quite passionate about supporting my colleagues or my patients who might have neurodiversity. I'm often the person that's approached, for example, with consultants coming to ask me questions about, oh, I've had this patient who's autistic, they're not managing their creams, their emollients, what do we think we would be able to do to help support this patient? Or it might be my colleagues themselves. I might ask them, if we're doing some training, is there any additional support that I need to be aware of? Do you have things like dyslexia or dyscalculia, or, you know, things that we need to put a support plan in place so that way you can get the best out of whatever we're working on together? So I think it's a variety of things. I'm hoping to do a little bit more about it. So I'm working with a young person from Eczema Outreach Support about developing a little, I don't know if it'd be called a booklet, but almost like a little guide about, from her viewpoint as a person who experiences it, and from my viewpoint of kind of as a nurse, of how do we manage these situations, because they can be very emotional, they can be very frustrating. Not only for the clinician, but for that patient as well. It can be a really tough experience coming into clinic, having to put on lots of creams, having to do that in their daily life. So it's just how we kind of support people and think about it in a holistic way, really.
It's so important what you've highlighted there. And like you say, it's not all sometimes, you know, even about the patient in front of you, it's about the staff that you're working with. And I know an awful lot more people are now talking about it. You know, we work with people that are neurodiverse within, you know, my clinical role, and we put, you know, support mechanisms in place. And I think it's so important to be able to, you know, recognize and support that, you know, people do need extra sort of support mechanisms. Could you maybe just explain, you know, if a person does have neurodiversity, how we can support them? I know there's different sort of aspects to this, but, you know, sort of some key sort of aspects that we could do.
So it depends on the approach that you would like to take. So there's some people that would suggest a universal accommodation approach, wherein you embed in the whole entire ethos of the department that you set a standard of that there is going to be a universal approach to meet 90% of patients' needs. So that might be, for example, while the patients are waiting in clinic, maybe handing them a leaflet to explain what is going to happen before the clinic, or maybe it would have visual pictures, or some areas will have a little digital display with little pictures saying, okay, this is what's going to happen in the clinic. There's also another approach where it might be individually in that clinic room, simply asking the patient, is there extra things that we need to do to support you? Do you have any additional support needs? Sometimes it might be the parent reporting that. Sometimes it might be the young person reporting that. In very young children, it will often be displayed in their behavior. So babies won't necessarily have the vocabulary to say, oh, I'm feeling this sense. Sensory overload, but they will display that in their behavior. So it's maybe asking the parent, okay, when have you noticed these times that they seem very overwhelmed? Is there a way that we can figure out what certain sensory overload is happening and remove extra things from that? So it kind of depends on the approach that you want to take. A lot of different areas are taking that more universal approach nowadays. So we have a CAMS department actually inside of our building. So they have little picture signs of above their little buzzer that says buzzer. If you go inside their little waiting room, they have, you know, little pictures of kind of what is happening. So, you know, you can kind of see that practice across different departments. So taking things and stealing what is already made and available is very useful. Or if the patient has a health passport, so asking them to bring their health passport that they can hand over to the support workers, that usually documents kind of how that patient communicates their choices for their appointments, things like that. So if they have that, that's very useful for us to have and to use before their appointment, really.
Absolutely. You don't need to invent the wheel all the time, do you? It's sharing the love of it, definitely. And it's so important for us all to take note of that as well. And I mean, phenomenal that you've got, you know, the CALMS department within your department, which is unbelievable. You know, not everybody's got these access to that excellent care. So we know we've got challenges, we know we've got restricted time, you know, more and more pressures coming on for our appointment times to be cut and more appointment times to be filled in. You know, as healthcare professionals, we're going through a lot of that at the moment. And for example, you've mentioned there a couple of times about creams. So if I've got, you know, a patient in front of me that is openly spoken about, you know, they're neurodiverse, and how would I support a patient with compliance, and how would I explain about topical treatments?
So it depends on the age of the child and their developmental ability. I work a lot with children, so I would sometimes use play as a method to introduce new things, new textures, or ask the parents to do that at home, you know, putting a range of different creams in different pots that the child could touch, put on their skin, put on the parent's skin, just to make it a little bit more fun. If it's an adult patient, it would be asking, you know, what textures do you prefer? If they have issues, a lot of patients have issues actually physically touching their own skin, it might be saying, well, could you put the creams inside of your clothes and then put your clothes on top? Could you use a spatula and then you're not actually touching your skin? You're using something else to touch your skin. could we use a spray? It's kind of thinking outside of the box. So it's thinking about it in a non-typical way and coming up with the wins. A lot of patients like weighted blankets. So I might say, oh, on the underside of your weighted blanket, could you just smear on a bunch of creams and then just sit on it for 10 minutes, you know? So trying to kind of come up with ways that they might be able to manage. For a lot of people, it's about almost preparing for that mental meltdown, particularly with autistic people with that sensory overload. So being aware of what that looks like. In a lot of children, that will be, they will have a kind of rumble stage where they get a lot of pacing, rocking, kind of going like that, like a little kind of seesaw motion. They might scrunch their fists up. So it might be giving them something positive to do with that emotion. So, oh, rip up this piece of paper, and then setting a visual timer for them to go, okay, for 3 minutes, we're going to put on your creams, but after 3 minutes, we're done. So it's kind of managing how that person would work it, and then giving it a positive, playful, imaginative spin, really. And it is very difficult. And we've had lots of, you know, it recognizing that we also find it difficult as professionals, I think, can really help parents as well, saying, look, this is something that we can offer suggestions, but we don't ultimately have the number one solution. And it is going to be a little bit of trying different things, trying different ways, and seeing what works best for you or what works best for your child. So, you know, kind of just saying, we understand this frustration, but we can give you some tips and some suggestions to try and see how that works, basically.
Yeah, it's good to say that, isn't it? Because sometimes we just haven't got all the answers, and, you know, what works for one doesn't always work for the other. And I think, you know, trial and error is a good way to put it. And I think as you work more with neurodiversity as well, you pick up tips from other, you know, people that have neurodiverse strategies. And, you know, often you can discuss, you know, what you've come across and, you know, how support can be implemented as well. So I think it's like learning, and the more we talk about it, the more we provide education, the more we provide that support, it's very important. We don't all have to be the expert that knows all the solutions, and I think that's an important message to get across to our listeners today. You mentioned as well, obviously, I know you work a lot with children, Molly. What about the parents that have neurodiverse, if they come in with their child and, you know, the parent actually has some neurodiverse tendencies, how do you work and give support with the parents?
Yeah, again, it's maybe asking that parent, you know, do you have extra supportive needs that I need to be aware of? Is the information, because we give these ginormous, huge, long clinic letters with written down instructions. So it might be asking, you know, do you want to go, because we've got a day treatment center, do you want to see the nurses up in day treatment center? And they can physically show you how to put on the creams, how to put on the dressings, because that might be easier for a person who understands visual information a little bit better, and they can link those two together. It might be giving an information leaflet with broken down pictures. So I have a little information leaflet about patch testing that has little individual pictures of every single stage and what the consultation rooms look like, and things like that. So I might give that to the parent to help not only prepare their child, but also prepare themselves, because it can be a very overwhelming experience to come to patch testing, because there's lots of stickers, lots of noises, putting on tape, different creams. It can be quite overwhelming with somebody who does have sensory overload. If it was a parent with a child with eczema, I probably would be suggesting very welcome to eczema outreach support group, because they have a lot more support than I can give in that clinic appointment. And sometimes tying in school nursing support, so making a referral for school nursing report. Because in some schools, the child can be supported to put on creams at school. So if the parent is maybe finding that a little bit overwhelming, or nursery, asking nursery, okay, during nursery time, during nappy changes, could the nursery help with that? So it's kind of finding out, are they getting that additional support in as well from what they could get support from?
Yeah, Absolutely. And you mentioned there about, you know, leaflets with pictures and that. Is that specifically something that you've created, that you've done, or is there somewhere that, you know, other healthcare professionals can access this? I know you mentioned Exma Outreach there. Is this the tools available?
Yeah, so there's a variety of different information leaflets that will have broken down little pictures on them. The one for patch testing is one that I've specifically created for our department, because it has pictures of our actual, like, the consultation room and where the person has the patches on and the exact patches we use and the exact tape that we use. And then I have a similar set for, like, our phototherapy cabinet and our day treatment cabinet, and then one of our surgical suites with all the little different tools that might be used. So it's very specific for us and our department, but there is loads and loads of resources out there. So I believe there's a website called So What Children's, which would go over, like, blood tests or skin prick tests. So if there is a child that might need that, then that's a really good resource. But there's plenty of, even if it's not necessarily exactly what your department would do, there's plenty of little, you know, video resources or picturegraph resources. Sometimes Autism UK will put together picturegraph resources. So you can kind of say, this isn't exactly it, but it's very similar to what we would do to give those people. So you don't necessarily have to create it. It's just, I wanted to create something specific for our department and for our children attending us, because we're not in the sick children's. So just kind of giving that little, this is what we look like, and we're nice and we're friendly, and nurses are great.
Oh, that's so good. That is so, so good. And, you know, it's so refreshing to hear that, you know, that, you know, there is access to other, you know, leaflets and other support that you can actually create as well. And, you know, you can personalize it at the end of the day. You know, it doesn't have to be a standard, one standard fits all, does it? We can definitely be inspired by what's out there, definitely. And you provided some good links there, so thank you for that. You mentioned Exma Outreach Support, who I've been very fortunate to work with, you've been very fortunate to work with. So what is happening with them? Because I know you're doing a wee bit of a project with Exma Outreach Support, is that correct?
Yeah, so I'm working with one of the young people on the youth panel, called Lucy. She is a young girl with autism, and we're basically putting together almost a joint document from her perspective about kind of tips with managing autism, how the consultation experience works, and then I'm kind of adding my own clinical kind of tips about it, and just kind of my own, because I have ADHD as well, kind of managing that as well. So we're kind of coming up with a little, I don't want to call it a master document, but almost a little booklet about how from both sides we can work together, patients, nurses, other healthcare professionals, to really improve the experience of these young people, of these children, parents who are coming into our clinics, and really making that holistic output, really.
That's fantastic. And I know, you know, the youth panel do some amazing work. So I really look forward
to that. She is incredible. Like, honestly, I'm just in awe.
I am as well, Molly. I am as well. I mean, I've done so much work with these guys, and they just are phenomenal. And if they stand up in a room, you always remember what they say. Definitely. We'll definitely have to do a future podcast with you and Lucy, without a doubt. Absolutely. So before we end this podcast, you've obviously given us some really good points there, and myself included. You know, we should be offering more support. You know, we know waiting rooms can be horrific anyway, you know, whatever the circumstances. So when you have got a neurodiverse patient, it's, you know, so much positive to help and, you know, sort of alleviate the sort of distractions and the noise, the buzz, what's going on in the waiting rooms. And I know with one of my patients, you know, he informs me exactly the time to come in, and then he kind of comes in a different door straight into my consultation room. And I'm more than happy to do that. I've done that before in the past as well. And I think just little things like that make a massive, massive difference. I know with some of our staff as well, we give longer appointments, you know, so we're not putting that 15-minute pressure on everybody. And also, We do the 15 minutes, we give them extra support, we put them in a room that's more appropriate. So it can be little tips like that that make a big difference, definitely. Mm-hmm. Is there any other sort of suggestions that you could provide for our listeners today?
A variety. Definitely make friends. If you work in the world of pediatrics and you happen to have play therapy in your department, or you can make friends with them, they have so many tips to give you. I have stolen many, many ideas from them. And they're very good at helping those children with that procedural anxiety, or preparing them for appointments, preparing them for tests, things like that. They do this day in, day out, and they make it very fun. So if you are able to make friends with them and ask them for tips, definitely do that. I've learned so much from them. The other thing I think is that although people assume it has to be a big thing, I think exactly what you say, that small little, even asking the question, nobody's asked me that question before, Molly. Yeah. You know what, actually, I do struggle to read. And I've been struggling to read all these information leaflets, and I just take them home and put them in my purse and I never read them. So even just that small little asking that question, thinking about it, is appreciated by people. So even those little things, I think, just shows that you do care, and it shows that you're trying, and you're trying to make a little bit of a difference. So it doesn't have to be a huge, massive overhaul of your whole department and everything that you're doing, and having all these, you know, yellow papers and yellow leaflets and signs on your doors or whatever. It can be just that little small little moment, or that little just acknowledgement of, I understand this is frustrating for you. I hear you, and let's try and see if we can work together.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, because I think, you know, we have doubts as healthcare professionals. We can't be experts in everything. And I think this is one of the topics where people don't always feel confident in doing the right thing. But I think, like you say, the little things can make such a difference, you know, acknowledging, talking about it, being listened to. And you can do that, you know, within the allocated time that you have. I know it can be difficult, believe me, I do know that. But, you know, it's just making that difference, you know, backup support, you know, these little gold nuggets that you can provide for these patients make a big difference, definitely. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be coming to a close, Molly, of this BDNG podcast, which has been absolutely fantastic. I know we will be working again together on more neurodiverse topics, and I'm sure our BDNG listeners today will also, you know, relish in the fact that we have been providing education on these topics, because this is something now that is very much spoken about. People don't hide away. There is people getting diagnosed. People know more about it because we've got good old Dr. Google or ChatGPT these days. So, you know, it is becoming common practice to have these conversations in our consultations. Is there any key sort of aspects you'd like to get across before we close this podcast today?
Yeah, I think it's about recognizing that neurodiversity is on a spectrum. It's about acknowledging the strengths of that person. So you might have a neurodiverse patient that isn't able to communicate verbally, but still acknowledging that they have strengths within themselves, and acknowledging that there is going to be frustrations, either from your side or from their side. And that's normal and that's okay. But as long as we're working towards something positive together, then any movement towards that is good.
That's brilliant. And you mentioned a couple of links as well. Could you just repeat that as well for our listeners today?
Yeah, so there's the eczema outreach, has specific support about autism and ADHD with eczema. There is also Autism UK has something called a health passport, which families can fill out, and then they can hand that over to a reception desk, which basically just outlines how they communicate and the additional support that they might need for that appointment. There is also another tool called Brain in Hand, which is about managing anxiety and overwhelm and sensory overload, which is like a little app. And then just kind of resources from there's Starlight, which is the kind of play therapy, play toy charity. They have lots of resources as well, like Now and Next boards that you can print off and laminate and then kind of either draw or stick little pictures of this is what's happening now, this is what's happening next. And loads and loads of resources online, really, from different charities. Mind is really good. So yeah, there's lots of things out there. You just kind of have to find it, really.
Yeah, well, you've given some really good tips there, actually, and a couple there I'd not heard of. So that's great, you know, just to be able to get these resources. So thanks again, Molly. As I say, it won't be the last time we hear from Molly on this topic, which is so valuable. And I really appreciate your time today, Molly. So thanks again. Thank you for our listeners today as well. And I look forward to doing more work with you in the future, Molly. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website, bdng.org.uk, and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.